Okay.
All right, welcome everybody to Gridiron Graduates. As always, myself, Ian Wharton, joined by my good partner and friend, Bill Rossetti, and very, very happy to have you guys listening this week. Of course, as we enter week 10, week 11 here in the NFL season, or again, that's getting close to that 3 month mark, which is insane that we're already here. Bill, welcome. Obviously, you also know this time of year is college football season, or college basketball season, sorry. And I know that that's something that, that you're always on top of, as well as football. How are you doing right this time of year, my friend?
Yes, it's a lovely start. Yeah, just so you guys know, I kind of let Ian introduce the show just for fun, because Miami beat Philadelphia, so shame on the Eagles. But yeah, you know, love this time of year, love the start of the college basketball season. One of these years, I keep telling myself, one of these years I will stay up for the entire 24-hour tip-off marathon. It hasn't happened yet. I tried last year, but kind of gave in. But I'd love to watch a Hawaii game live at like 4 o'clock in the morning. That's always my favorite part of the marathon, is seeing the Hawaii's there every year. But yeah, great time of year.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's fun too. You've got obviously baseball off season hitting. You've got college football in a good time of the year, with bowl games rapidly approaching. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the rivalry games coming up next weekend. So basketball, of course, NBA as well. So it's a good time of the year for sports. And although if you're like us and a fan of a team that's not too great in the NFL, it can be a little bit rough. But as you mentioned, kind of want to, well, we could start with actually that game, the Dolphins and Eagles. Not going to get too into what Miami did or anything like that. I think the big overarching theme when you look at that game looking back, outside of the Eagles collapse, which if you want to touch on, you can, but more so what I'm concerned about is the Sam Bradford injury. Obviously, when the Eagles acquired Bradford, the big knock on him isn't necessarily that he's a bad player. It's that he doesn't play a full season. He always has something wrong with him as far as injuries, and some of it's freaky stuff. I mean, I don't qualify torn ACLs and stuff as injury prone. I think those are kind of freak injuries.
Yeah.
But obviously that shoulder, he's had so many shoulder issues since coming out of college. You know, anytime you have two or three or more shoulder injuries, you really have to be concerned. We saw Sanchez come in and play, and that wasn't too promising.
No.
So what are your thoughts now with Bradford missing, you know, possibly a decent amount of time here the rest of the season?
Yeah, it's not looking good. You know, like you said, Sanchez didn't play well, and you know, you could certainly attribute that to one of the reasons that Philly lost that game. Yeah, you're probably not going to see him Sunday against Tampa Bay. You probably won't see, well, Bradford, I mean. And you probably won't see Bradford on Thanksgiving against the Lions. Now, at least, even with Sanchez at quarterback, these are two winnable games for the Eagles. You know, being at home against Tampa Bay and then at Detroit, though Detroit just beat Green Bay. But then again, Miami should have been a winnable game for Philly. I mean, both of us and Oscar, when we were all in the Miami pod, we all thought Philly would win. I know I picked them to cover the spread. I know you took Miami and the points, so we kind of differed as far as like the spread, but you know, we all figured this would be a winnable game for Philly. So that's disappointing too, especially with, you know, the big win they got over Dallas the week before. And I know it was only Matt Castle, but still, to get a win like that to more or less save their season and keep them in the division race, and then to come out at home against the Dolphins and lay an egg is just utterly disappointing.
Yeah, especially how it happened, because
yeah,
you know, we had traded a message on Twitter when the Eagles went up, I think it was, what, 16-3?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it looked over at that point because that was the point where Miami's really struggled. When they get down by two scores, they have a lot of difficulty stopping the run, which obviously is not ideal facing the Eagles. And the offense tends to go one-dimensional. And that didn't happen. You know, to credit to Bill Lazor and the Dolphins offense, they didn't do that. They stuck with the run. They stayed with their strengths, which that has not happened very often in the last year and a half. You know, and then I was just really surprised, though, with Philly. I thought that they were just going to go inside zone with Murray more often than they did. And, I mean, that's really a good way to beat Miami. I'm surprised. I was surprised at the game plan. I'm surprised that they didn't do a better job of continuing to go at the tight ends, because Brent Celek, man, I mean, guy couldn't be more open in the first two quarters than he was.
Yeah, I mean, the first play goes for 60 yards, and you almost unbelievable. Never see Celek go for big plays like that anymore.
Yeah, it's absolutely, absolutely insane. So it's a really bad loss for Philadelphia just because of how well they started the game. It's not a bad loss in terms of the team they lost to. I think Miami and Philly are pretty similar. I think overall, I would probably take Philly's roster, but I like obviously Miami's quarterback better, which, you know, I think they're similar enough to where that's why I picked Miami to win, kind of how they were trending entering that game. But I still like Philly. I still think that they can do good things. I was a little surprised, man. That was a game where it started the way that it should have for them to win. And especially losing Bradford now, who hasn't been stellar, but, you know, he's been good enough, and he was starting to play a lot better. I think that's really the concerning part, is once a guy's starting to hit his stride a little bit, you lose him to injury, and that's a really tough break.
Yeah, and, you know, what sucks, too, is that had they won this game, they'd be sitting in first place right now. So in that sense, too, for me at least, you know, that's the more disappointing part, is they missed an opportunity to take over first place. Now, obviously, they're not out of the division, being only half a game out, and they still have to play the Giants. And, of course, they still have four of their next six at home. But, you know, who knows? Who knows what will happen, and who knows how long Bradford will be out for. But yeah, week 10 was certainly full of a lot of surprises as far as games went and whatnot. I mean, Detroit goes into Green Bay and beats the Packers. You know, just kind of scrolling through the scores quick. Washington beats the living daylights out of New Orleans. Chicago trampled St. Louis. I mean, just a lot of surprising. And the Bengals losing their first game of the season.
Yeah, stunner. As a stunner loss.
That was surprising. Yeah, I mean, for the Bengals, who, you know, we became accustomed to how great of an offense they've had this season, for them to only put up 6 points was just amazing.
Yeah, I mean, that, and it was really, really, I mean, I'm not this guy that's like, I'm not a big Andy Dalton fan, but I mean, he's played really well this year, and it's not just him, it's that entire offense, but It's pretty crazy to me that, you know, the narrative is on him, and I don't use the word narrative as a negative. Because sometimes I feel like, because of Twitter, it has like that negative connotation to it, but
right.
he has the narrative that, and that stigma that in primetime games he's going to come up short and he's going to really struggle, and go lo and behold, Thursday.
This is just going to continue to drive that story up.
Yep, Thursday night footballs, Monday night football, playoff football. For some reason, Andy Dalton just struggles. It's like clockwork at this point, and it's really, it's eerie. It's actually eerie. And I don't know what it is. I don't know if it is just the pressure. I don't know if it's the other team just engaged and maybe Cincinnati just took them lightly, which, hey, it's the NFL. You can't afford to take teams lightly, even if they're like Houston. Man, Houston has looked like one of the worst teams in football all year. And all of a sudden, the last eight to ten quarters that they've played have been a little bit better. And it's like, you know, since Miami drubbed them, they've been playing a little bit better. So I don't know exactly why, but you know, shame on Cincinnati, not for losing the game, but to just be so flat. And that's what really worries you, I think, is, you know, long term, it's not a huge loss. I mean, look, this is still a team that's, what, 9-1 or something? 8-1?
8-1, yeah.
I mean, you're not going
to win the North, yeah.
Yeah, like, you're not too worried about the team. But it is a concern because it just says, hey, this should have been a game where it's one thing if you lose a barn burner, but you really didn't want to lose, like, a low-scoring affair because it just kind of shows that the team didn't take them seriously and the team wasn't focused.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, again, long-term, is this going to be something that I look back on in the playoffs and say, well, you know, Cincinnati's not going to beat so-and-so because they lost to Houston? No, absolutely not. Like, that's not what I would say. But it was a pretty stunning result because if you're going to pick one game to lose this season, I would not have thought that Houston would have been that game.
Yeah, and definitely credit Houston, too. Like, I saw a couple people on Twitter talk about it, too. Like, clearly, Houston used that bye week to their advantage and really prepared for Cincinnati. And hey, you know, Cincinnati or the Texans, you know, they're back in the playoff hunt. It's crazy to say at 4-5, but here they are tied for first in the division and actually only one game out in the wild card. And they play the Jets this week, who are tied for one of those wild card spots. So who'd have thunk that the Jets and Texans this week could have some playoff implications. You know, it's like we said a couple weeks ago with the Vikings-Rams game. It's surprising how some of these games, you know, long-term could affect the playoffs. And let's go back to Green Bay. And, you know, it's just really surprising to see, you know, three straight losses now for the Packers. And, you know, I caught a little bit of that game earlier, and, you know, people have been talking about it on Twitter. I don't want to say Aaron Rodgers is struggling. I mean, I know I've seen people say that, but, I mean, I guess, you know, and you brought up this point a couple weeks ago, I think now you're starting to see the effects of not having Jordy Nelson on the team.
Yeah.
You know, but I still think, you know, they'll figure it out. You know, I have to believe, you know, I know the whole narrative of, you know, oh, Rodgers struggles, like, you know, in the playoffs or on the road, blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, I still think he'll figure it out and turn it around. I wouldn't be surprised if they come back and win the division. You know, certainly an important game for them on Sunday against the Vikings. Hey, by the way, first place Vikings. How about that?
Yeah.
Pretty cool to see.
Big statement win for them against Oakland.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was really glad to see that because I took like one of those – I took an article – or I wrote an article saying that the Vikings are a Super Bowl contender, and it was kind of like a leap of faith. I mean, I looked at them and I said, you know, great defense. I like their quarterback obviously a lot. Even though, you know, Bridgewater's not super dynamic, but I still really like him. I think he can do more than what they're asking of him.
And when you have the best running back in the league, you don't have to be Superman.
Right. And it's a good thing. Like, that's how teams should build themselves. They should say, okay, well, look, here's what we have. Let's use him, especially at, you know, 30 years old and a guy that's not going to really probably last more than a couple years. You might as well use him. I don't think it's a negative when a team uses their best asset as much as they can. You know, it makes it easier on Bridgewater as well, especially after last year when Bridgewater looked good with a bigger role, but it's not what you want to do for your young quarterback. So, yeah, I think that was a big win for them. It was a tough matchup. Oakland's another good team, even though that they're, I think they're currently like a top 10 pick, but they're still in like the playoff race. So it's like the NFL is in a really weird place as far as parity, which is what they want. you know, all these teams are still in like the playoff race somehow. And but no, that's a good win for them. But yeah, I mean, Green Bay, going back to Green Bay, they've got a dogfight against Minnesota here the rest of the way out. Minnesota has a pretty rough schedule, but they're clearly playing better than what Green Bay is. And you know, Aaron Rodgers, he looks lost. He looks lost. He's playing with less talented guys. And it's kind of funny, like, as much as I love, I mean, I love Aaron Rodgers. I'm a huge Rodgers fan. But it's kind of refreshing to see these quarterbacks struggle when their weapons go down, because I think it makes people realize that it's difficult to win without having a good team. Mm-hmm. And maybe the biggest difference for Rodgers is he doesn't trust his offensive line, and that seems pretty clear to me. I think that's pretty obvious when you watch them, because he's not extending plays the same way that he does when he's at his finest. And that's really what makes him the incredible quarterback that he is that he extends plays, makes those huge chunk plays downfield. And I mean, you don't see it with other guys as consistently as you do with him. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, if that offensive line gets a little bit healthier, if they can maybe get guys rolling. You know, I know Davante Adams hasn't looked as explosive, I think, since he's come back. That's obviously a problem. Obviously, we know about Eddie Lacy. We've talked about him before. But no, I'm totally with you. Like, this Packers team, they're definitely dangerous, but right now, it just looks like a different team than what we saw during the first 5 or 6 weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, certainly a lot of time for them to turn it around. And speaking of quarterbacks struggling, it's still crazy to say this, it's still just crazy to witness the almost end of the decline. Like, he's been in decline for quite some time now, and this could very well be the end of Peyton Manning. What a weird day, too. It starts out as a day you'll never forget, and it ends up being a day he'd rather forget. I forget how long it took him, like how many plays it took for him to get those yards to become the all-time passing yardage leader in NFL history, which, you know, obviously, congrats to him. That's quite an accomplishment. But then, boy, he just looked flat-out awful. Was it 4 interceptions, I think?
Yeah.
And then he eventually gets benched, and now they're going to sit him this week against the Bears. So, come on down, Brock Osweiler. Eesh.
Yeah, and it's kind of sad. It's kind of shocking, really, to see Peyton Manning's career come to an end like this. And you know, I was thinking about this, and it's kind of funny. They talk about how you start life in diapers and you end life in diapers. And Manning's kind of doing the same thing with his NFL career. I looked at his numbers, and obviously his rookie year, he threw the most interceptions he ever had. And at the end of his career now, if he were to play the rest of the season the same rate that he began the first 10 weeks, he would be on par for 30 interceptions. Oof. On the season. And it's just, it's unbelievable. And a lot of it's injury related. We've heard reports that the guy didn't have feeling in his fingers the last couple years. The production that he's had in Denver is just incredible, especially considering the neck surgeries. I mean, the guy may not have ever played again when they signed him. Like, they didn't know. Mm-hmm. And I think everything he's done is incredible. He obviously had a calf injury last year. We know that it clearly affected him last year. The plantar fasciitis this year in his foot. I mean, I've heard from people that have had that. I used to work at a running store where we would work with, you know, I'd help people get shoes that needed different arch support, and just like their stories of it were just insane. I mean, it's apparently one of the more painful injuries you can have to your lower body. And just imagine being a quarterback trying to fight through that. I mean, you can see why the guy just is a shell of himself on top of everything else. And you know, it's pretty sad to see him go out like this. I really wish he would have retired at the end of last year. But, you know, he's a warrior, man. Like, it's a guy that doesn't need the money. I know he's making great money, but he doesn't need it. He's playing because he loves the game, and he's playing because he knows that, you know, once it's over, it's over. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't ever get back on that field unless if, you know, you're Brett Favre. But, you know, I think it's pretty clear physically that Peyton's done. Whether he plays again this season, we'll see. But you're right. It's the Osweiler show now, and we'll see, man. Like, he was super raw coming out of Arizona State, and I'm not sure if he's going to be the answer. I wasn't a fan of his coming out. Big arm type, but I don't know. I'm not really like the big arm fan. Like, I prefer guys with like good to average size arms, just because I think that you need other skills to be effective when you've got a somewhat limited arm. And those guys tend to be like the better ones in the league outside of like Carson Palmer. So, and even he's lost a little bit of it, like the crazy velocity he had coming out of college. So, it still is a great arm, don't get me wrong, but yeah, man, like it's just gonna be really interesting because Osweiler has the opportunity. He needs an extension after the season, so he's in a very unique position where he's gonna be playing for the first time in his career for an extended time, but also he's playing for a contract, which is crazy that, you know, he's gone this long without having to play. And of course they're obviously a Super Bowl contender as far as their team is concerned, but a lot's going to be riding on his shoulders if Peyton can't come back and be healthy.
Yeah, so that'll definitely be something to watch going forward. And you brought up Carson Palmer. Let's talk about him a little bit too, because he's got an interesting matchup this week going against his former team in the Bengals. And I think I saw a tweet of a quote of his. He said something like, what was it? This is more than a game to me, or something like that. Or something along those lines. So clearly there's still some, I guess, hard feelings or whatever you want to say between, Palmer and the Bengals. 'Cause that was certainly an interesting way that relationship ended. So, but that's going to be a fun game to watch Sunday night. You know, two very good teams. We'll see if that Andy Dalton primetime narrative continues. But I'm really looking forward to watching Palmer against that defense and, you know, that Cardinals offense and the Bengals offense against that good Cardinals defense. That's going to be real fun to watch, I think.
Yeah, I totally agree, man. This Cardinals team is just so fun. They're just so talented. Like, the more I think about it, the more I think that they might be my NFC favorite to make the Super Bowl.
Yep.
Just because you look at their offense, and they are the least limited offense, maybe in the league. I mean, they don't have that power running back that can really, you know, grind out those yards when you need it at the end, but they might not even need that. Like, they've got two effective running backs and Chris Johnson, which is still shocking to me.
Yeah.
it blows my mind.
The guy was a free agent till August.
Yeah, and he changed his game. Yeah, like, it's a guy that he changed his game. It's baffling to see a running back be away from the game that long, come back, reinvent himself, and be effective. It's just, you just don't see that. And, you know, Andre Ellington, we know he's pretty effective in limited touches, and then obviously their passing game is just, it's unbelievable. It's extremely difficult to stop. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm really liking this Cardinals team, man. I try to watch them whenever possible. And, you know, Carson Palmer's a really good example of a quarterback that teams gave up on him, literally gave up on him. And he continued to improve, had a big injury, came back better than ever. Like, that's why I preach patience with these young quarterbacks that flash. Because it takes a long time for them to ever realize their potential. And, I mean, you've got guys like Philip Rivers playing the best football of his career, Tom Brady playing great football, Ben Roethlisberger. Like, a lot of these guys are in their low to mid to upper 30s, anywhere in between. But if you listen to fan bases, a lot of them would have given up on these quarterbacks years ago, because at 25 years old, they weren't showing that they were the next great thing. Well, I hate to tell you, but it takes a long time for these guys. Oh, and Jay Cutler's playing the best football of his career, too. So it's like sometimes you just have to have the right situation, the right players around the quarterback, the right coaching, and sometimes it takes a couple tries to get all that right, and you have to have the good support system there. But it's really good to see a guy like Palmer. I like Palmer a lot. I think him having success at his age is really incredible.
Yeah, I'm definitely happy for him too, and at least we're now finally getting to see, or hopefully it stays this way, but it certainly gives you a sense of how good this team was last year before Palmer got hurt, and how far they could have went if Palmer didn't get hurt. But in that sense too, at least knock on wood, he doesn't get hurt, but at least they do also have a reliable backup in Drew Stanton. Just seeing Palmer at his age, coming off a torn ACL, is just incredible. And I have to agree with you. I think right now I'd maybe pick Arizona as potentially the NFC favorite. I know Carolina's 9-0, but color me still a little bit skeptical that their success can translate into the playoffs, because with the struggles in the passing game, the drops of Ted Ginn and not much elsewhere in the passing game other than Greg Olsen.
Yeah.
The running game, never know what to expect out of that week in and week out. I don't know if that success can continue in the playoffs when everything's magnified, and you're obviously playing, much better teams, when they'll be matched up against teams like Minnesota potentially, or Arizona, or even Green Bay, or even if Seattle sneaks into the playoffs. I think even though they might have home field, I think it's still going to be a tough road for the Panthers to get to the Super Bowl. I think Arizona can go into Carolina and beat them.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. And my concern, like you kind of mentioned, I just think with Carolina, I think at some point it catches up with them, that it's not, it's not a bad team. It's not as bad as what I had really thought, especially before the season. But I think at some point, especially in the playoffs, every single play is magnified. I just think the pressure is going to be a little too much for them to handle. I think eventually they'll lose one of those games that it comes down to which team has the best collective group of playmakers. And I just don't think you can compare those two teams, big picture.
So let's look ahead a little bit to week 11. We of course have the all exciting Thursday night game this week between the Titans and the Jaguars. Two teams currently in the top 10 of the draft, and two teams within two games of the division lead. Go figure.
Yeah.
And oh, by the way, those jerseys for the Color Rush. Oh my God, Oof. Were they awful last week.
Oh, you didn't like them last week, really?
At first I did, but then I'm watching the game, I'm like, ugh. I was like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
I felt like I was watching a Christmas tree.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Jets for me were worse. Like, if I like the Bills ones, but I guess you're right.
Bad, but the Jets were pretty bad.
Yeah, and together it was really hard to.
That might have been what it was too. I think just the blend of the two of them together just made it look worse. Yeah, I think I agree with you there. When I saw the picture of the Bills jersey by itself,
it was kind of sharp. Yeah,
I think I can agree with you there that them on the field mixing with the Jets green made it look worse.
I'm really interested to see what the Jaguars jerseys on TV look like. To me, it looks like baby poop.
Yeah, looking at the pictures from last week, I didn't like the Jags jersey at all. I thought they were pretty bad. The Titans didn't look too bad, but again, we'll see how it looks tomorrow when they're playing each other. Good thing we're not colorblind.
Oh man, I can't even imagine. I watched that clip a couple times. like that gif that they made, it started to give me a headache, and I was just like, I can't imagine watching this for more than like 3 minutes if I was colorblind. It was crazy. I just don't know how they didn't think about that.
Well, this is the NFL. They never think about anything.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
If it doesn't push their agenda or make them look good, they don't care about it.
Unfortunately, true.
So, some other games. We talked about the Broncos earlier and the improving Chicago Bears. That's another surprise, too. I mean, I think you and I both thought the Bears would be pretty bad this year, but hey, here they are, 4-5, kind of in the playoff hunt. Winnable game at home against Osweiler, so that should be interesting. Oakland at Detroit, Indy at Atlanta should be interesting, although I think Devontae Freeman could have a real good game on Sunday against that Colts run D.
Yeah, it's been interesting with Atlanta. They've kind of fallen off here in recent weeks, and mm-hmm. I think they kind of jumped out to that fast lead, and they kind of, you know, blew their shot a little early. And we'll see, though. I mean, still plenty of time for them to recover and obviously make the playoffs. But it was a little interesting how they've kind of fallen off.
And they still have both games to play against the Panthers, so they're certainly not out of the division race.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
We talked about the Jets-Texans game earlier with the fact that, you know, there's some playoff potential there. Tampa Bay at Philly, Washington at Carolina. It'll probably be 10-0. You know, they're doing well here in the regular season. But, yeah, the real test obviously is going to come when they get to the playoffs for the Panthers.
Yeah. I don't know how they've had – it seems like they've had a really easy schedule.
It does feel, though, like that too, doesn't it? I mean,
yeah, like they played and they got lucky when they faced Green Bay because Green Bay was really struggling.
They caught Green Bay at a good time.
Yeah.
They won at Seattle, but I think we're starting to see that Seattle's kind of falling off a little bit. The bottom half of their division still kind of stinks. The NFC East obviously stinks. And then they've played the AFC South, and we know, you know, nothing else needs to be said about that. You know, they've played they've played all four teams already in the South. So, yeah, you play the schedule you play. You know, there's nothing they can do about it. They can't help the fact that the AFC South sucks this year, but,
yeah,
you know, it certainly doesn't help. You know, it's one of the reasons why we wonder how they're going to do when they get to the playoffs, since they haven't exactly faced top-notch competition yet. But I'm just bringing up their schedule quick just to see who they play down the stretch. They've got Washington this week, then Dallas on Thanksgiving, New Orleans, Atlanta, the Giants, Atlanta, and Tampa Bay. So, boy, you look at their schedule, it's hard to find a few losses on here, too.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And you wonder if it might be just like, just kind of like that Bengals loss where, hey, we just have a bad game.
That's probably what it's going to take, yeah.
Yeah.
It could happen.
Yeah, it does. It does. Even the best teams, even the best franchises sometimes happen, so.
Yep. You always have those WTF moments.
Yep, absolutely.
Usually they're in week one, but sometimes they do spread out throughout the season. Your Dolphins get Dallas this week, and they get to welcome back Tony Romo. So how do you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's funny because I think I was talking to Oscar about this, but like I was kind of hoping Sanchez was going to lead a game-winning drive against Miami. You know, I was excited that it was an exciting game and close game, but you know, I'm fine with this Miami team losing. Like, I really don't want them to go 8-8 and to retain this coaching staff. Like, they need to clean things out. They need to start fresh. They need to, you know, get some new blood in there, especially clean out the coordinators. And just, you know, it sucks to say that, but you know, for the long term health of the franchise, I know that's what's needed. So, you know, it was a bittersweet win last week. I'm ready for the second half collapse if possible. I'm just not looking to, you know, make the playoffs and then be stuck with a crappy coaching staff for another 3 years. You know, like, I realize the situation of it. So sometimes you just got to hope that the best works out. And, you know, I'm not rooting against the team, but I'm not anticipating them winning against Dallas unless if Romo is super rusty, which is very possible. That's very possible. It could happen.
And I think right now Miami would have the 10th overall pick in the draft because I finally was able to make my spreadsheet where I set up the draft order based on full season strength of schedule, not just, you know, going on ESPN and pulling the strength of schedule numbers they have on there that are only games up to that point. You know, I pull it all the way out. So, yeah, so I've got Miami 10th right now on the board. So let's say they hover around that spot. You know, would that be a decent spot for them? Could they get a solid player at that spot in the draft?
Yeah, definitely. It's a strong draft this year if all the underclassmen come out as expected. I'm a big fan of this class. I think that there's great depth in the first couple rounds. There's a ton of stars at the actual top of the draft, which you can't say every year. You know, there's actual, like, I'd say probably 7 or 8 maybe stars entering the NFL. And that's hard to say. Now, obviously, there will be guys that bust. There will be guys that end up emerging as mid-round stars, late-round stars, maybe even undrafted stars. But you know, that's the thing with scouting is, like, sometimes guys just perform better in the NFL because they get a better role. They maybe have a stronger support system. And, you know, there's a lot of different things that contribute to success in the NFL. But you're seeing that guys like Ronald Darby with Buffalo. But yeah, absolutely. Like, I think that they're going to have a good chance if they're around 10 to get an impact defender, maybe like Jalen Smith or Miles Jack, and then second round, maybe address the pass rusher role with a guy like Noah Spence, maybe Emmanuel Ogba. And I think that defensive side of the ball is really where Miami needs to build.
St. Louis visits Baltimore this week, and like I tweeted earlier today, if Baltimore loses this game, then we get a pair of 2-8 teams playing each other on Monday night in Week 12, because the Ravens will be in Cleveland. Which, by the way, how the hell does Cleveland get a home Monday night game? Poor ESPN. You know, as bad as the Thursday night games are, ESPN sometimes gets stuck with some pretty dud games too. I mean, you know, we obviously didn't think Baltimore would be coming into this week at 2-7, but you know,
yeah, that's tough.
Beast, like, I guess.
Yeah, that's one of those things where it's like whoever's putting together the schedule. I don't know why they don't start the year with teams like that. I understand having like a big opening game, but I feel like if you're gonna get teams like that on primetime football, put them early while there's still interest in them.
Mm-hmm.
Put like the big franchise names later in the year whenever possible. And I know the team like Baltimore busted. So, you know, even if they were in a primetime game, you live with that. Chances are, though, Pittsburgh, New England, Arizona was probably at least going to be decent this year. Like, you know, like, you can figure who's going to be a better team than not,
mm-hmm,
entering the season. I think that's where ESPN and these schedule makers get things wrong too often. It's like, because we see this every year, second half of the year, there's a ton of bad games on primetime football.
Yeah. So at least we do get, you know, at least thank God for scheduling.
Yeah, absolutely.
So like this week, for example, you know, Cincinnati Arizona was not the original Sunday night game. I believe it was Kansas City and San Diego. Well, obviously, San Diego stinks this year, and this Bengals Cardinals game was attractive, so they moved it. Now, granted, of course, too, you know, you have the caveat of the game has to be unprotected. You know, these broadcasts still get a chance to protect some of these games. So that's why people say, like, oh, why wasn't this game flexed? Well, Fox kept it or CBS kept it or whatever.
Right.
And, yeah, you know, so we do have – I mean, we have the Lions and Saints coming up on Monday Night Football in a few weeks. So, that's probably going to be another dud. Your Dolphins have a Monday Night game coming up, though, too.
Yeah, yeah.
That'll be interesting.
It's really tough with – I'm not a fan of – it mostly because of social media. I'm not a fan of my team being on primetime football just because the hot takes are so scalding. And generally, as like a country, many fans don't watch teams unless if they're on primetime football. So when your team like Miami has a propensity of playing very poorly on primetime games, makes it very difficult to overcome the narratives that are built off of, you know, very, very limited exposures. When the reality is, it's like there's 15 other games during the year. And sometimes, you know, people don't see any of those.
And then we got the rest of the, so the aforementioned Kansas City, San Diego. We talked about Green Bay, Minnesota, San Fran at Seattle, Cincy, Arizona on Sunday night, and Buffalo at New England on Monday night.
Yeah, it's a big one.
That's gonna be a fun one. Patriots looking to stay undefeated. The Bills looking to stay in the playoff hunt. Do the Bills have any chance in this one?
I think they do. Their secondary's healthy. They've got their top four cornerbacks healthy and playing, or at least they all should be playing for this game. First game was close, was competitive. It ended up being close at the end. But it was a competitive game, even though Patriots, you know, ended up pulling away before Tyrod Taylor brought them back. But it was still, it's one of those games where, okay, if you're Buffalo, you're a little bit more rested. You know, you found yourself a stud running back in Carlos Williams. Tyrod Taylor's still playing well. Sammy Watkins is amazing if he's healthy and can play. I'm not sure if his status is good for this game or not, but either way, you know, I think Buffalo has a chance. I know it's going to be a popular pick this week. So, you know, if you're looking to bet this game, just watch the line. And if it starts to creep towards Buffalo too much, go towards the Patriots. Generally, whoever the public doesn't choose ends up being right more often than not. But, you know, I have a feeling like Buffalo can win this game. Would I pick them to win? Probably not. It's tough to beat the Patriots, especially I believe the Patriots are at home this week, correct?
They are.
Yeah, so it's, you know, Brady's, I think, is like 47 or 48 and 4 in his last 50-some games. So, yeah, good luck.
That's pretty but impressive.
It's possible, though. It's possible.
It's definitely possible, but yeah.
You got to cut down on the penalties if you're Buffalo. I think that's the biggest key. Just way too many self-inflicted stab wounds.
So let's switch gears, talk a little bit about the college game because – you know, some interesting notes. We'll start with the playoff ranks that came out the other day. No change in the top four, surprisingly. Really, top five actually stayed unchanged. So Clemson still number one, Alabama, Ohio State, Notre Dame. Are you surprised that they kept Notre Dame at number four?
I am, but I think if teams take care of their business, I don't think they'll be ending up in that top four.
Yeah.
I think a lot of things are going to change, to be honest with you. I could definitely see Clemson losing. I don't think I could see Alabama losing. I don't think I see Ohio State losing either. But you know, you never know with college football. I mean, as much as I don't want to think of, I don't want to think of Ohio State losing. It's possible, especially because they face a lot higher competition here the last couple weeks.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Notre Dame has a good argument. You know, their biggest win is against Temple. And it's good to see Temple playing well this year, but they're still not a good team. They'd get trounced by every one of the top 15 teams in the country.
And it didn't help that Temple got spanked by South Florida.
Yeah, so
that
I mean,
hurts Notre Dame too.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, to tell you something, I think Oklahoma State or Oklahoma should be that number four team. Yeah. But there's a lot of teams with a good argument too, and I think it works itself out. I mean, honestly, one of the most annoying things I see on social media is this crazy reaction to these polls with like 3 weeks to go. It's like, guys, every year it works itself out. Teams lose. It's gonna be okay. We're gonna have a clear sense of the top four or five teams at the end here, and maybe one team gets screwed. But I think the committee and the BCS, I thought they both did a pretty good job of picking who should play where, and they end up putting together some pretty good mashups. I believe in the process that we've got, even if it is flawed. If Notre Dame ends up in the top four over a team like Oklahoma State or Oklahoma, whichever one wins that matchup, and if they eventually finish the season, at, you know, whatever they may be, 11-1 or whatever, Oklahoma State would have to be undefeated. But, you know, say the one of those two teams takes care of business the rest of the way out, I think they'll jump Notre Dame, and I think they have a great argument for that, especially with Stanford losing.
Yeah.
And Notre Dame facing Stanford, it's not quite as an impressive win now as if Stanford hadn't have lost recently. So I just wouldn't worry about it too much, but it is fun. It is kind of fun to talk about. It's just not fun to see like fans getting all butthurt about it. It's like, it's good. It's great for discussion. It's great for debate, but it's not great when one party takes it too seriously. Getting all worked up about it.
Yeah, and you brought up a great point. You know, the key that I was going to make as far as Notre Dame falling to number four, it's that upcoming Oklahoma State-Oklahoma game. Now, obviously, both teams have to take care of business this week. I know Oklahoma State plays Baylor. I'm not sure offhand who Oklahoma has this week. But, if they both take care of business this week, then that game next week in Norman is extremely huge, and very possible that the winner of that game gets into the playoff, especially if it's Oklahoma State, because you're not leaving out an undefeated Power 5 champion. You know, that's why, you know, Ohio State, Iowa, if one of them wins out, they're in. Clemson, Alabama, if they win out, they're in. That's why Florida certainly in the mix too as well. If they win out, which would include probably beating Alabama in the SEC title game, they have a case to get into the playoff because they'd be a one-loss SEC champion. And that would include beating a Florida State team that right now is still top 15. So yeah, they'd still be picking up some wins. Like you said, Notre Dame's best win is now against a team that's not even in the top 25. So it's, in that sense, it's, you know, pretty interesting that they're still number four. I'm guessing what's holding Notre Dame up is that loss to Clemson.
Yep.
You know, and it's funny though. I see comments and stuff about the rankings. I've seen people say like, you know, who has Clemson beat to be number one? Well, considering one of their wins is against a team that would currently be in the playoff, I'd say that's pretty good. You know, I think you could argue Clemson has the best win on their resume of all these teams, you know, beating a team that's currently ranked number four. So, you know, they certainly have an argument to be number one. I mean, Alabama certainly has a case, but as we saw last year, seeding isn't necessarily important. You know, right. Just the fact that you're in, you have a chance. I mean, Ohio State was the last team in, and they won two games. You know, they almost won, you know, you can't really call it a road game, but certainly Alabama had, I would think, had the crowd advantage playing in the Sugar Bowl. You know, you're down in New Orleans, but they went in there and they beat Alabama, and then they beat Oregon in the final. So, you know, like you said, things kind of play themselves out. And then also what I want to talk about too, the Senior Bowl got its first group of accepted invitations for the 2016 game. And I guess every so often now they'll announce more invitations, but yeah, their first wave of invites were accepted, including our first quarterback, and that was North Dakota State's Carson Wentz. So I know you've been following him a little bit this season, so how has Wentz played so far this season? I know we talked about him a little bit back at the beginning of the season after the game against Montana, but how's he done since then? And, you know, how can he do, you know, what's his draft prospect look like and playing in the Senior Bowl, things like that?
Yeah, he's an interesting guy. He's obviously got the NFL size that you love. He's got a big arm, a very strong upper body. He's able to overcome mistakes that he may make with his technique, with his great arm. He reminds me a lot of Joe Flacco, and that's kind of the comp that I've stuck with. Even down to he throws a really bad deep ball. Even though he has a great arm, his deep ball lacks touch. He lacks anticipation and timing on those throws right now. And part of it is North Dakota State doesn't ask him to do much. So, you know, it's a very run-heavy system. They generally have more talent than the other team on a weekly basis. So it's a little bit difficult to evaluate him. Positive-wise, I think he'd be a great developmental quarterback. He's the type of guy, he's got an effortless throwing motion. He's smart with the football for the most part. He's got the tools that suggest that he could be an upper-level player eventually. Now, I do have a lot of concerns with him as well. I mean, I'm the type that I really don't – I give quarterbacks slack whenever possible, but when I don't see it, I'm pretty harsh. And it's – I mean, for the most part, I hit quite often on these quarterbacks. And most of it's because if you watch a lot of NFL, that's key. It's key to watch – it's key for prospect watching, honestly. You need to watch a lot of NFL games to know – what works in the NFL and to see what the guys that pan out and don't pan out, see their traits. And there are some concerning things with Wentz. You know, he locks on to receivers. He doesn't really manipulate defenses with his eyes. He lacks touch on his throws, which I kind of mentioned. It's kind of every time the ball comes out, it's usually at one speed. And that's a big concern, especially when you're a hard thrower. His pocket presence is pretty poor. He doesn't really feel the rush coming, and he doesn't escape it especially well. Now that all being said, that's still to me a round three type of guy. That's still a guy I like taking stabs at quarterbacks, because sometimes, again, you can build an effective offense even with his limitations. Every quarterback has a limitation. Every quarterback has weaknesses. Every quarterback can be built around, though, if their negatives aren't too debilitating. And I could see this guy having success in a couple of years. I could see him sitting down for 2 years, getting some experience here and there, learning from a good coach, from a consistent system, a guy that doesn't get canned after 1 year and then a new coaching staff doesn't believe in Wentz and doesn't give him the time of day because he's not, quote-unquote, their guy. But, yeah, I can see this guy being successful at least as maybe an average starter with maybe even more upside if he gets into the right situation. You see a guy like Derek Anderson stick around the league for a long time as a backup, and I think that's probably his low-end projection is a backup. And that still has value. Like, if you take a backup in the third round, that's not ideal, because the goal is to find at least an average starter. But with quarterback especially, just the value of quarterbacks is so funky and so different that you want to make sure that if you're interested in him, you'd rather take him a little early than a little late, because you're going to, if you miss out on him, you know, you never know when you're going to get your guy again to be a good developmental backup.
And then if you just want to mention some of the other guys that you have an idea on that are in the Senior Bowl now.
Yeah. I'll touch on the two top other guys. Sheldon Rankins, the defensive tackle from Louisville. He's a pretty athletic guy. Plays in a 3-4 front with a mix of 4-3 for Louisville, which is really interesting. I'm not sure exactly the best place for him. He's a really good run stopper. His athleticism doesn't always show because of how they use him. And at 6'2", 300 pounds, he's kind of in like that weird range of being a 3-tech and a 4-3 or a 5-tech for a 3-4. But I'm still not exactly sure his best place in the NFL, but he's got the tools that you like. He's quick upfield. He's strong at the point of attack, very good lower body. I just want to see a little bit more explosiveness from him as a pass rusher. And then my other guy, Jordan Jenkins, the linebacker from Georgia. He plays 5 technique an awful lot for Georgia, and I don't think that that's a strength of his. He's not quite good enough at the point of attack as a run defender to be playing that position. He would need to be like 30 pounds heavier to play that in the NFL. But by all accounts, he's going to test extremely well at the combine. You can see his pass rush ability quite often, even though he's undersized for the position. So if you put him at outside linebacker, and I think you can go back a year or two ago to find his outside linebacker tape, and it's pretty good. He's a pretty high impact pass rusher that you can get on day two. You know, I'd much rather take a guy like him than say like Trent Murphy, who was taken in the second round by the Redskins a couple years ago. I'd much rather have a guy like Jordan Jenkins because he's very athletic, so he's got a decent upside, but he's also fairly refined as well because he's got an NFL-sized body right now. And as far as strength, too, his strength is ready right now to make impact pass rush plays.
We'll certainly talk more of these prospects as they come in. Certainly hoping to see a couple of Penn Staters accept bids soon. And if you guys are listening, I would love to go to the Senior Bowl. So, it's become a goal of mine to get down to Eaton. I know you've been down there and you certainly have had a great time. So, you know, I would certainly love to get down there and just experience it, meet up with everybody, get to see these prospects. So, maybe I'll win the lottery in the next couple of weeks and we'll go.
that would be great.
I don't know.
It's a good time. Yeah, it's a good time down there.
Talk quick about your experience there.
Yeah, so I've gone the last 2 years. I may go this year. Honestly, I haven't thought about it too much. It hasn't been something I thought of. I'm not even sure exactly how far I am now from it. Because I was in Houston, so I was able to drive there about 7 hours, and I was staying with my buddy who lived in Mississippi. And so it was a good excuse for me to hang out with him, and it was a good excuse to, you know, get away for just a couple days. But we'll have to see if I end up wanting to take 4 days off of work to go. But it is a great time. It's a good social opportunity, especially for draft Twitter and professionals on Twitter. But it's also a good opportunity to actually meet NFL personnel at night, especially more so than at like the practices. You'll see a lot of scouts, but they stay pretty huddled together. You can interview players if you get credentials, and that's a good time. It's a really good experience as far as that, because I never had done that before. So I was pretty nervous my first year. I was even nervous just to like go up and talk to people. But you know, what you really realize there is that everyone's just a regular person, and, yeah, it's great. It's really, though, I think my favorite part is meeting up with Twitter personalities. And you kind of see that, like, people on Twitter are usually a lot different than who they are in person. And it's a good thing. Like, that, I mean that as a good thing. You know, it's hard to have your personality come across in 140 characters without sarcasm fonts and without a real ability to go in-depth with conversations and it's a great opportunity if you can afford it. It really is a good time. But you know, it helps to have like a buddy system there. So like, it's good to be hanging out with like a group of people. I rotated people the last couple of years, especially last year. I rotated. So like one day I spent the day with Alex Brown. One day I spent the day with Scott Karasek, and who is the other one? Who was I? Oh, Jeff Risden, of course. Another day I spent it with, who are we with? Oh, Luke Easterling and Brian Perez.
Nice.
So yeah, like you'll see a lot of different guys. One year I was with Matt Miller, and Michael Shoddy. So like, you have those opportunities, whether you're an analyst or whether you're a fan, we're all approachable. Everyone's approachable. You won't see stuck up people, and it's a good opportunity to even just say hi and get your foot in the door. Mm-hmm. Or say, hey, can I sit here and can you talk to me about what you're seeing? That's really a great learning opportunity. And it, you know, for my, even myself and for, you know, everybody there, I mean, it's a good opportunity too, to see how coaches coach. I learned that I really like how the Jacksonville Jaguars run their practices. They're very high intensity. They're high energy. You see a lot of coaching going on. But then I also learned that I'm not a fan of Mike Smith for the Falcons when he was with the Falcons. I was not a fan of how he ran his practices. They were very boring. They were very one-on-one type of practices where you don't have a lot of efficiency. It's a lot of people standing around at once. Whereas the Jaguars were running drills for every position, or even when it was team drills, they had two sets of team drills going on. So again, it was more about efficiency. You're trying to get more snaps than you are less snaps. So it's just very unique. And even if you can only go for like 2 days, I would recommend that you go on like Monday and Tuesday. By Thursday, everyone leaves. Wednesday is the last real practice day. Mm-hmm. And Sunday, if you can make it Sunday, Sunday's weigh-ins. So that's kind of funny, too. It's kind of a good time. But you know, there's a lot to do there, but it is expensive. And if you're flying in, then you need to get a car. You need to get a rental car, like, now. You need to get your hotel now. Get all of it taken care of.
Yeah, so... Yeah, definitely, you know, from hearing you, and then I read articles of people with their experience, it definitely seems like it's a fun time. And if I am there, and you know, for you guys listening, I'm approachable. I'm a nice guy. I'd like to think so. I'd like to think, you know, you could come up to me, because knowing me, I'd be a nervous wreck out down there. I'd be, like, scared to walk up to people and... You know, just very nervous, you know, even for some of these big Twitter personalities. But yeah, it'd definitely be real fun to go. I'd love to meet guys like Matt Miller and, you know, Matt Waldman if he's down there, Cecil Lamb. And of course, if the two of us are down there, that'd be pretty sick to get the grid grads down in Mobile. So, you know, future possibility, who knows? Maybe we'll call this the GoFundUs to Mobile 2016 episode.
That'd be great. That would be great.
Yeah, so any final thoughts? I think we rambled on enough here.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Just yeah, no, it should be a good week of games, and college football is obviously ramping up as well, and so just enjoy, sit back and enjoy while we still have it. We're not gonna have it too much longer, unfortunately.
Yeah, only a few weeks left, and of course, college basketball is back. Go Tar Heels, 3-0 at the time of this recording. I know they haven't exactly played anybody great yet, but hey, Wofford's not a bad team. Wofford was a tournament team last year. So, in any event, for my buddy Ian Wharton, I am Bill with the optional Y, Rossetti. We are the Gridiron Graduates. Thanks so much, as always, for listening. And until next time, as Jerry Springer says, take care of yourself and each other.